Hey everyone, welcome to Ecclesia. Glad to see you all here. All right, well, we're trying something new right now. We're trying to work both Facebook Live and Zoom at the same time. They were supposed to work together, like the Zoom thing was supposed to just Zoom to Facebook Live, but it was not working. So I've got a computer, an iPad, a phone, and an extra monitor all going at the same time, which makes me feel kind of like some kind of video DJ or something. But hopefully all of this will work. If you need to, if you're on Zoom and you need to ask a question or say something, you can go ahead and chat on there. There's a space to do that, and hopefully someone will respond to you or just let me know. But if you are a member of Ecclesia and you come to things and you want to, you can go over to Zoom. There's a link in the little video I posted about 30 minutes ago that'll get you right into things. You'll see the same video during the talk, but the main reason, if you're a part of Ecclesia, that we'd like for you to join in the Zoom thing if you can. I'm not sure how many times I can say Zoom and feel like an adult, but is because we'll be doing some other questions. I think I may even send out a little poll inside the Zoom thing afterwards, do some announcements. So there'll be more happening on Zoom than is happening on Facebook Live. So however you're joining us, we're glad to have you. If you have the option to join us on Zoom, we would love to have you do that. So I hope that everyone is hearing me pretty well and that it's working on all fronts. But there's a lot happening here, so there's a good chance I've messed something up. Anyways, all right, so those of you, again, I know we got people that are jumping in that are not really a part of Ecclesia, so I feel like I need to explain a little bit about who we are. We are a church out of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, not associated with any particular denomination, kind of a wide variety of folks who normally gather on Sunday nights in someone else's building at Parkway Heights Methodist Church, who allows us to use their space. And we basically just try to simply follow together, which means that we look at the teachings and the person of Jesus. We try to organize our lives individually and communally around that. We have decided to do things a little different than a lot of churches do, which doesn't make it better or worse. It just makes it different. But we might be your kind of different. So if you don't have a community that you're connected to, community that you feel attached to and feel like you're a part of, please know that you're welcome to join us virtually for the next few weeks. And you are invited to join us in person when that time comes, when we can, I don't know, actually see human beings again. So you are welcome. And ecclesiahattiesburg.com is how you can find out more about us. And so, yeah, we look forward to hopefully seeing you in person sometime before too long. So, again, if you're joining us on Facebook Live, we do have a Zoom link that is posted a little farther up the page. If you can do the Zoom link, please either click over to that now or click over that at the end of the Facebook Live, because I'll end Facebook Live and then we'll still have more stuff happening for within in the church body on Zoom. All right. I don't ever want to say the word Zoom again. anyways, I did want to remind us again of what we're doing right now and what kind of series we're going through, I guess. We were in the middle of a series on the Lord's Prayer. We will pick that up at some point again because I think it's important and I really do love that prayer and what all it means. But we are spending some time now in the desert, I guess not literally, but in our lives in general with this whole COVID thing and not being able to meet in person and being isolated. But the spirit of Lent and the season that we are in is that we are celebrating the wilderness, the desert. We are celebrating both Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness where he was tempted and found his identity before the public ministry, which is also, of course, ties back to the Exodus, to the time when Israel was saved from oppression and from slavery. And God saves them to the desert, right? And so you may remember that we talked the first week, 2 weeks ago, seems like 9 months or 12 months ago, but we talked about the idea that it is strange that God saves to the desert. We talked about the idea that the desert plays an important role in the life of faith. These are the places where God often finds the means to change our identity, to help us rethink who we are and why we are and what we do and what we don't do and why. And so Those old identities die hard, and sometimes we need something like the desert to help us to recognize what our slavery has done to us. And even though we may not be rescued from Egypt as the Israelites were, we of course have our own kinds of slavery, our own things that are defining us in ways that they shouldn't. And then last week we talked about our tendencies when we head into the desert, and we tried to own what that looks like for us. And so we talked about the three main tendencies. We talked about the tendency to forget what God has already done for us, right? Immediately in the text, the Israelites are grumbling. They are upset. They're angry after God has done all these things for them. And so we tend to forget what God has done. Then we also tend to believe false stories, conspiracy theories, right? They begin to come up with a story that somehow God has saved them, the plagues, walking through the sea, opening it up, swallowing their enemies, all to take them to the desert so he could starve them to death, right? And so it doesn't make any sense, but we're scared. We don't know what's coming next. And so we believe the stories, especially anything that makes us the victim and someone else the scapegoat, right? And so we have to be careful that we don't believe into the run into the false narratives after we've forgotten what God has done for us. And then finally, we talked about just the strangeness of how the Israelites wax poetic about their own slavery, right? If we just could be in Egypt again with the pots of meat and all the bread we could eat, right? And suddenly they're talking about slavery like it was a good thing, but we tend to do that. We tend to remember selectively when we are in an unknown, new unknown territory. And so suddenly they're talking about slavery like it's a good thing. And so we talked about that idea of loving the demons we're familiar with more than the salvation we need. And so we talked about that last week. And you can go back on the Facebook page and see the live video. We haven't posted it for our podcast, and there may be a way of doing that, so I'll have to work on that and figure it out. But we are planning on spending two more weeks in the sermon series in the desert. Looks like we'll be in the desert a little longer than that as a culture right now. But I want to talk about the two of the main ways that God tries to reform the identity of God's people. And I want to talk about manna and Sabbath over the next 2 weeks and what role they play in the desert. And so we're going to work on that. And this week I want to talk about manna. And we're going to start by just looking at the text for right now. And for those of you on Zoom, I'm going to try to actually bring the text onto the screen. But who knows if I'll be able to figure out how to do that correctly. So I'm going to work on it, though. But so what we are in, of course, is Exodus 16. And see if I can get this going here. And so in Exodus 16, we read the following. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us? And Moses said, when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, and what are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of Israelites, draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining. And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, I have heard the complaining of the Israelites, and say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. In the evening the quails came and covered up the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather as much of it as each of you needs, an omer to a person according to the number of persons, all providing for those in their own tents. The Israelites did so, some gathering more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, those who gathered much had nothing over, and those who gathered little had no shortage. They gathered as much as each of them needed. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over until morning. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul. And Moses was very angry with them. So in this story, we have God, you know, the way they waxed poetic and remembered their slavery, we have God basically going above and beyond even their selective memory of what slavery might be. And in this, we have God supplying this, for lack of a better term, manna, is this magic bread from heaven, right? It's this thing they don't even know what it is. And the first thing I want to point out here is I want to remind us that all of this is a loving response from a God to the complaining masses, right? In fact, if you read that scripture over and over again, he hears you're complaining. It's over and over again, right? Manna and next week's Sabbath that we'll talk about are both gracious responses of God to an angry people. It's an act of grace. It would be easy to argue that maybe right now an act of revenge would be in order. He's just delivered them. He's just done these miraculous things, and they're complaining. Yet God's posture remains one of redemption. They complain and they complain and they complain no matter what God does for them. But God does not give up on the mission to save or to fundamentally reform the Israelites, right? This is yet another reason why God is better than most of us, right? If I do enough nice things for you in a row and you still complain, you're probably not going to get grace from me, right? Even the cutest six-year-old in the world, which we've been spending a lot of time with lately, if we go out for pancakes in the morning, and then we go to the zoo, and then we go to the park, and then we go watch a movie, and then we have, tacos for dinner, which is what she likes the most. And then before bed, she's like, why can't I watch another show? She starts complaining. I'm not usually full of grace at that point because we've done everything she wants that day. I've given her everything I can give her, and she still wants more, right? And so that's that button that you get pushed as the parent. Not as much in the last couple of weeks because we haven't been able to go anywhere. It's hard to say at the end of the night, why are you complaining? You got to go to the front porch, the back porch, the living room, and your bedroom today. I don't know what the problem is. But anyways, we as people, I think you're not going to get grace from us in that moment, but God responds to the complaining with grace and redemption over and over again. God does this through manna, does this through this magic bread that tastes like heaven, which is, it tastes like honey, right? The land of milk and honey, this idea, this image of heaven. And it's there. And it's there every day, every morning. All you need is a tremendous act of grace. All this to teach what Walter Brueggemann calls a dependence that does not lead to fresh bondage. A dependence that does not lead to fresh bondage. So this first reformation that comes with manna is a reminder that God is gracious. But it's also a reminder that we are dependent. We are dependent on the good gifts of God. For generations, these people have already been dependent, but they've been dependent on the hand of their oppressor, right? They've been slaves. There's been cruelty. There's been exploitation. Food was not freely given. In fact, nothing was given without exploitation. They were dependent upon Egypt, who would and could arbitrarily kill, rob, destroy them. And then God offers this gift as they complain freely, day after day after day. God gives these good gifts. Every good gift, Scripture says, comes from God. So God teaches them a dependence that does not result in exploitative bondage. It's a different kind of dependent than they've been as slaves. So God teaches them this new kind of non-exploitative dependence. Now, let's pause there for a moment, because to our ears, this story might seem better to us if instead of God teaching them a new kind of dependence, non-exploitative, gracious dependence, what if God had just taught them independence? What if God had just taught them how to just take care of themselves and they didn't need anyone anymore? You're not slaves. You're your own person, right? If God took these former slaves and taught them that they were all they needed, showed them how to wear a good pair of boots and where the straps are and how to pull themselves up by it, right? But God doesn't do that. That would be a very American story, the kind of thing we like. But God doesn't do this. And frankly, I think God doesn't do this because it's an illusion. It's not truth, right? The truth is we are all dependent, no matter what we like to tell ourselves. And the desert is a very good reminder of the fact that we make lousy gods. The desert is very adept at reminding us that we really are dependent. We are not as self-sufficient as we like to pretend that we are. The desert removes the illusions that we are our own gods and that we can truly be sustained by the broken systems of this world. There is a God, there is a creator of all things in whom we find our being. There is a God, and it is not us. It is not the systems we build. This kind of dependence, though, is good news. It sounds weird to us because we are independent kind of people, right? We love independence. But this dependence is good news because we, again, are dependent on a God who is all-knowing and all-loving, a God who is gracious and generous. And it is against this backdrop that we try to form our lives as people of faith, that God is good. God is gracious. God is generous, right? The act of faith is to have unwavering confidence in the fact that God is those things, that we live not in scarcity, but in abundance. That while our own fear and greed may cause us to believe that we live in scarcity, the truth is God has given us all we need. And we should hear that again. God has given us all we need. Right? The faithful mindset of abundance is something that we don't talk enough about, I don't think, in churches and as people of faith. And the desert reminds us that the Israelites, it reminds us and the Israelites of the truth that they do in fact have enough. Every day they're reminded that God is giving them all they need. And this is why when we see the hoarding that happens later on, people gathering more than they need and it's rotting and stinking up their tents, right? This is why hoarding is not just against the rules of God, but against the spirit of what God is doing, right? It's, in fact, it's patently absurd given the situation. What could be more stupid than gathering more of what you need of something that's going to keep showing up every morning anyways? Why would you do it? It doesn't make any sense. Why would you value that? That just shows up, right? We found this happened this week with Lillian. Lillian wanted to make some cards for kids that are in her school class that she hasn't been able to see. She, of course, misses them a lot. A couple of them have birthdays coming up. So we were looking for something to kill another 15 or 20 minutes because we're not homeschool teachers, but we're trying. And so she was making cards. She's making cards for kids in the class. And after she made the cards, she wanted some tape. And I said, okay, and I got her some tape. And then she went into a room and she proceeded to open up her piggy bank, pour out coins, and tape coins across all of them, right? So they're like a pound each, these envelopes, and they're just covered in coins that have been taped on there because she wanted to give them a present and wanted to give them something nice. And that is sweet and that is generous. And I do love that about my daughter. She is a very generous kid. But the truth is, not to downplay the generosity of my daughter, but the truth is, literally for her, pennies are from heaven, right? She's never worked and earned a penny. That's not how things work for her. Pennies just show up. They just show up in her piggy bank because I don't want them, and so I put them in there. When grandparents come by for a while when she was really young, if she just heard change in someone's pocket, she would just walk up to them with her hand out and say, monies. And she was so cute, people would just give it to her. So she's got all the coins she knows what to do with. They just show up. Why would she hoard them? Why not give them to her friends? Why not share them with those around them, right? Because if it just shows up, if it's just these magical pennies from heaven, there's no point in trying to gather more and just hold on to them. And in the same way, in the desert, God is providing this manna. It is absurd to hoard it. It makes no sense to gather more than you need. It's just going to be there the next morning, all you need. God has already given you all you need. Every morning, a fresh batch of heavenly bread, right? They do not live in scarcity. They are in the desert, but they do not live in scarcity. They live in abundance. And yet some of them, like us, take more than they need, and it smells up their home, right? They have all they need. We have all we need. Hoarding makes no sense when you faithfully believe that we are in a world of abundance and not scarcity. And you may rightfully be saying this, Mike, that's easy for you to say. You're a middle-class American guy. You don't worry about where your next meal is coming from. You've got a job that's paying the bills. You've got a roof over your head. It is easy. Maybe you live in abundance. Maybe you live in abundance. But what about all the hungry people all around the world? And that is a great point. What about them? What do we do with that? And this is a much bigger conversation than I can cover in the next couple minutes here, or that I'm even qualified to talk about. But the truth is, when it comes to those kind of things, I think we don't see it correctly most of the time. The fact that so many around us are so lacking is not evidence of scarcity from our Creator. It's evidence of hoarding for us. The fact that so many people lack around us is not because God did not provide enough for us. It's because we are hoarding. It's evidence of hoarding. People aren't without in this world because God didn't provide enough. People are without because some of us have taken too much. People are without because humans, with the opportunity to do so, adopt a scarcity mindset. And we hoard. We gather. To borrow a quote that I didn't make up, and I don't remember where I heard it from, but there is enough. There is enough for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed, right? Here's a little example. And I was going to save this for when we talked about our daily bread, and we may bring this up again when we get back into the Lord's Prayer series. But I looked it up again, the statistics, yesterday. So Americans make up 5% of the world's population, but we use up 24% of the world's natural resources. So hear that again. We make up 5% of the world, but we use up 24% of the world's natural resources. So think about it like this. This is a way I like to think about it. If all the world's population were 100 people, there was 100 people made up the entire population of the world, and the world's resources were 100 sandwiches. That's all the natural resources the world had was 100 sandwiches, right? So 100 people, 100 sandwiches. There would be five of us that named ourselves Team America, right? Five of us would walk to the pile of 100 sandwiches, and we would basically take almost five sandwiches each. We would take 24 of the 100 sandwiches and let the remaining 95 people fight for the rest, right? And really, as you start to work your way down your list, I mean, America may take up 24%. Next country may take up 13%. I mean, you get down to the bottom and you're literally leaving people crumbs. Now, I don't need that many sandwiches. I got a big appetite, but I don't need five sandwiches, right? It's hoarding. And I don't know the answer to that. It's not an easy answer. But the truth is, we have enough. We've just hoarded so much. You know, and if you listen to our news or you watch our politicians and you listen to them, just start listening. If you have an ear for it, you'll start hearing this fear, this scarcity mindset happening all the time. They're coming for your sandwiches. Hide the sandwiches. They're coming for your sandwiches, right? And yet here I am with five for one meal. And it seems hardwired into our nature, right? The slightest indication, think about this in the last 3 weeks. The slightest indication that for once there may be a little less sanitizer or toilet paper on the shelves, and what do we as people do? We buy as much as we possibly can. As much as we can get our hands on. I fill up my carts with so much toilet paper that I can have a clean backside for a year. And then the family that follows me in, who just needs one pack to keep the family going for the next couple weeks, doesn't have any, right? It's hoarding. It's a scarcity mindset. It's a lack of faith in our supplier. Now, I know that the COVID problem and everything we're going through, there's a lot we've never done before. It's hard to know what to do. There's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to yet. But I do know that the virus is not multiplying people. It didn't show up on the scene and then there was twice as many people as there were before. Now, 9 months from now, there may be some multiplication happening, but as of right now, that's not part of what the virus does. So we had the same amount of people. We had the same amount of trucks bringing the same amount of stuff. All the food that we've, we have store shelves that are always full here in America. Other people come from other countries and can't Imagine why you need that many different kinds of bread or all the stuff that's on the shelves, right? Everyone's been eating. Everyone's had toilet paper. Everyone who wants hand sanitizer has had it. Our shelves were full. There is plenty for everyone. But that little bit of fear, and suddenly we're in the scarcity mindset. Suddenly, there might not be enough. I have to gather as much as I possibly can. It's a false sense of scarcity. And in the desert, God makes it so that the extra manna that they hoard smells up the tent. It rots, right? This is the training of a people not to take more than they need. And this is probably, honestly, this is probably the chief sin of our culture. We are consumers. We take so much more than we need. I don't know how to stop doing it. You probably don't know how to stop doing it. And it at the end of the day, it gets down to this fear, this sense of scarcity that's just false. As if God has not proven that there's enough. I mean, I don't know about you, but in the last couple of weeks, I think I have a stronger sense than I have in a long time that God has given me so much more than I need. That this whole frantic trying to gather more thing that I do is based on a lie. God has already given us everything we need. And the constant grasping for more stuff, more money, more security against this supposed scarcity, it's ultimately fouling up the life of abundance we already have, right? This is the kind of people God is trying to form. People who understand that they are not dependent on the hand of their oppressor, that God is the author of all good things, that God has given us all we need. We don't have to gather more. We don't need to fill our tents with that which will ultimately stink it up, right? So with manna, God is trying to form something new in Israel. God is trying to form a people who understand that they have all they need, that God is generous and gracious and will meet our daily needs. If we can just hold on to the abundance of our good God. I saw a picture of a street painting that someone posted yesterday that said, "You are not stuck at home. You are safe at home," right? And I like that. It's just a lens shift. And it reminded me of the immeasurable differences the lens we view things through can have. It makes all the difference, right? And God's manna in the desert is intended to change that lens for God's people. There is a God, and it is not you. That God is gracious and patient and will generously give to all of us who are in need. And if we can just believe this truth and we can just act like it's true in this world, then maybe we can all go to sleep with full bellies and without the stench of this world in our nose. God provides. God loves. God is generous. And until we buy into this abundance, till we really believe it, there's no way we're going to be generous like the God we claim to follow. And I hope that's something that happens in this desert time for all of us. I hope we begin to see how much we really have. How we don't need all the things we think we do, how we do live in abundance, and we can be humble and generous and thankful for that. All right, next week we'll talk about Sabbath, which is another idea that gets kind of foreign to us now. But as you spend your time in the desert, I hope maybe you will think about and look for God's manna, kind of that stuff from heaven that sustains us, that is just grace that falls down every day. For those of you that are on Facebook Live, thanks for joining us. For those of you that aren't a part of our community, know that you are welcome to join us virtually and when the time comes in person anytime you want. Ecclesiahattiesburg.com is how to find out more about us. If you want to support the ministries of this community, you can do it through there as well. And let me encourage all of you working in the nonprofit sector of the church world, those two arenas are going to get hit really hard in the next few months. So to whatever degree you are able, please continue to support all those people doing good work around town. Because I've been on a few meetings with them this week, and it's going to be a real struggle. There's some people who are panicking who are doing great work in town. So take care of yourself. If you are on Zoom, hang out, stay there. If you're not on Zoom and you want to jump in and you're part of the church, That link, maybe Caroline or someone, sorry to put you on the spot, can post that underneath this, and you can jump over there and join us. Wow, nice job. That went faster. Caroline is on it. So thank you. Peace to you, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.